Gettysburg Seminary presents the Seminary Explores podcast. Conversations on faith, art, people, politics, theology, life, and more. With voices from around the corner and around the globe.
Good day. Welcome to the Seminary Explorers. My name is Nelson Strobert, and my guest today is the senior pastor of Frederick Church of the Brethren in Frederick, Maryland, Pastor Paul Monday. Welcome to the Seminary Explorers.
It's an honor to be interviewed today.
Okay. Well, we've been talking offline for several months,
yes,
about transitions in life, and particularly transitions in terms of retirement.
Yes.
And after over 20 years, I believe.
It'll be 20 years next summer.
Right. At the Frederick Church of the Brethren, that you will go into retirement.
Yes.
And first, I'd like to ask you, what factors contributed to your decision to retire after all these years of engagement in the church?
Well, to be very honest and rather vulnerable here at the outset, I would much rather initiate a transition than to have the congregation initiate the transition.
Okay.
So part of this, if I can start with a little bit of vulnerability, is a little bit of pride and ego, in the sense that as I was indeed approaching age 65, the research is showing, Susan Beaumont in particular has written a great article on this on her website, congregations start doing the math. They start figuring out, my pastor is moving towards 65, a traditional retirement age, and they begin to sort of question, when is this going to occur? Is it going to occur? And so I kind of sensed that that was part of the dynamic that would eventually happen. And I wanted to essentially set the pace for that rather than having somebody else initiate that particular topic.
Rather than getting a letter or
yeah, rather than having the personnel committee, whatever it is in your particular congregation, initiate a conversation saying, I think really we need to talk about your tenure here by virtue of the fact that indeed, you're moving, in your mid-60s here.
Right.
So it's a rather vulnerable thing to say, but it's a very honest part of the way I wanted to approach this. So I wanted to take the lead and have appropriate initiative, I guess, in trying to kind of set the tone.
Well, you want to set the tone, and at this point, your congregation knows,
yes,
that you will retire.
Yes.
And they ask, how was that received? Now, I believe you have a large congregation.
Yes, we have over 1,000 members. Our worship attendance would be over 900. And so we did it to a two-letter system. We essentially gave a letter that was provided after Easter announcing that indeed there was a strategic initiative related to the need for a transition plan related to my eventual retirement.
Mm-hmm.
And then we actually announced the names of the transition team, indicating that the actual date of the retirement would come in a second letter. That letter was just sent out, I believe, last week, if I remember correctly, that officially announced the retirement for June of 2016.
Okay.
So we did it through our strategic plan initially, and then through a two-letter process. And we believe that that two-letter process allowed the congregation to receive the actual date of the retirement without the traditional either shock or,
yes,
emotional kind of trauma sometimes that occurs after a long tenure.
Well, you mentioned two things. One is transition team.
Yes.
What is this team doing? What is its responsibility?
Church consultants across the country now are recommending this, that we, of course, William Bridges years ago initiated the most well-known academic research base on transitions, and he's written several books in this regard. But the church, in many regards, unlike corporate America, other organizations, perhaps nonprofits, whatever, has not been intentional about transition. So a number of consultants have now recommended that indeed a church be intentional about transition by the formation of a transition team. Russ Crabtree wrote the classic book called The Elephant in the Boardroom, where he began to work at this idea, and recently Leadership Network in Dallas has published a book called Next, which also lifts up the importance of the intentionality of having a transition process. They at least infer in that book that a transition team is a part of that.
Okay, so that they was able to stabilize, in some ways, the initial reactions.
Yes, exactly.
And that then helps you, as
yes.
well as the other leaders within the congregation,
yes.
I think.
Yeah, it really does, and what it does is it tries to put some structure and some discipline and rationality around what is a very emotional announcement. Part of this, we can get into this perhaps a little later, that surprised myself was the depth of emotion that's involved with this type of transition.
Say some more about that.
Well, there is the rational, professional, structural part of this, the transition team, the need to have a new strategic plan for a large congregation, the fact that there will be the eventual departure of the senior pastor. I mean, all of that rational reality needs to be there. But I believe really what cannot be structured and cannot be fully controlled is the emotional reaction. Now, Roy Oswalt, in his classic Running Through the Thistles, really refers to pastoral transition using the Kubler-Ross paradigm of death and dying. Now, you can go a little bit too far with that.
Yeah, but could you, for our listening audience, what does that entail?
Well, it really is what Roy Oswalt is saying in this his classic monogram published by Alban Institute, you know, years ago, is that really a pastoral transition is much like a death. You've given birth to ministry together with your lay team. In my case, it'll be 20 years next summer of day in and day out intimacy at the most critical moments of life.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden now that ends because in most denominations like ours, there is an exiting of the senior pastor in such a way that the senior pastor does not return to the congregation.
Right.
At least after it needs to be some absence. So there's a sense that after all this intimate encounter, literally life or death kind of encounter, that all of a sudden it ends. It stops.
It stops. And so you're saying that there are stages to this transition.
Yeah, yes, right. And one reason why we're using the model that most universities and colleges use, where the official date is announced about 10 to 12 months in mm-hmm. advance, is to give ample time for persons to move through the various stages. Now, there's debate among some as to how much time is too much time, how much time is too little time. But in terms of really processing this, in terms of the grief factor, we're finding the model used by most university and colleges to be advantageous. Now, I need to quickly add that, at least for me, there is a wish, I guess, that I didn't have to move through all the stages. And
well,
and I think that in most situations, if we want to get a little morbid about this, when you're talking about death, I guess, if you want to talk about pastoral transition as like a death, most of us, when we're encountering that on a personal level, we want to skip through stages. We don't want to go through the suffering part of all of this. So there's a part of me that applauds the timeline that we've chosen.
Right.
There's another part of me, to be very honest, regrets that we have this timeline because in many respects, I guess I'm going to be very vulnerable, it probably would have been easier, at least initially,
yes.
to slip out the back door and just be done with it. Now, of course, the literature quickly corrects me and says that the avoidance of the stages actually ends up
Being detrimental
to you.
Exactly.
But I must say, and I'm in the midst of this now, and had some conversations just this week, there is very much more than a pain related to this. There's a part of this that really involves suffering. If one truly has been truly connected and truly involved with a congregation at the level of intimacy.
But not only were you involved in the congregation,
yes,
but you've been involved within your denomination.
Yes.
And could you share with our listening audience some of the responsibilities and involvement in ministry prior to coming to Frederick?
Yeah. For 13 years, I was on the national staff of our denomination, the Church of the Brethren, outside of Chicago in Elgin, Illinois. Was director of evangelism, congregational growth. I did that for 13 years. It's interesting, my wife reminded me the other day, I didn't do that transition extremely easily either.
Okay.
When I left the national position to come to Frederick, Maryland. I recently confessed to our staff, I don't do transitions well. At least I'm doing this one very decisively, strategically in that way. But recalling my days on the national staff, I was just reminded recently that was also a difficult transition to leave a national
right.
position
yes.
and then to come back to the local parish.
Right. So that and part of pastoral ministry or involvement as in the public ministry of the church is
yes.
one's continuing education. And
yes.
Could you share with a listening audience what your educational process was?
Oh, you mean in terms of just my formal education?
Yeah, formally, yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm a graduate of Fuller Theological Seminary in Pasadena, and then I did my doctoral work at Princeton, the Princeton DMIN program,
mm-hmm.
And actually did it on congregational transformation and congregational renewal.
Okay.
So my DMIN dissertation documents really the intensity that we've had over the last now almost 20 years of really taking a congregation that was pretty maintenance-oriented, conventional in terms of its congregational approach, to what many would call more of a missional type of approach, where the congregation is reaching out in the community. We just recently did our picnic in the park outreach in Baker Park, adjacent to downtown Frederick, and you know we reached at least 2,000 people through that one single outreach. We just recently this summer we've sent probably 5, 6, 7, maybe 8 mission teams literally around the world. Reaching out.
So from your congregation?
From our congregation. Right. We started multiple new worship services. We have one at 1115 called The Basement, which is targeted towards millennials and others that want
millennials,
more.
Meaning?
Well, 20-somethings
okay.
who don't connect with a traditional sanctuary. They want more of a kind of a black box theater kind of venue. So we've created that in our multi-purpose room. So we've literally, over the last 20 years, transformed the congregation from a traditional, more staid, pastoral care-focused type of church, all those attributes being very important,
right,
to one that is really now primarily outwardly focused.
Okay, and that was a process.
Yes, yeah, and I've just met with our leadership team chair, our board chair last night. We were reviewing some of this, and again, a tremendous amount of effort, energy, tremendous amount of stress and initiative related to all that. So yeah, there's been a lot of blood, sweat, and tears expended.
But it also says, in terms of the congregation, that you are not the center of the congregation, that it seemed to me that that there was an empowerment of
yes.
people, you know, as you said, you know, rather than
yes.
pastoral care focus,
yes.
that you branched out.
Yeah, very much so, and that's what I'm really proud of in this transition. For example, this summer I've preached very little, and you know, it really hasn't affected the attendance or the giving, whatever. We've really had tried to really not have a pastor, senior pastor-centered approach to ministry, but one that is more team-based. Certainly strong leadership from the senior pastor. But what we're going to be beginning next week with our transition consultants from Minneapolis is even more of a handing over of the baton of leadership, so that when I do depart next June, you know, there isn't this sudden fall off in terms of attendance and giving and that type of thing. And this is the critical part of a transition, I believe, that's really overlooked. I kind of began the podcast here confessing I've got an ego like everybody else. There could be a big downside to that, in the fact that a senior pastor can really almost insist on being the center of focus. Mm-hmm. And we've seen a number of flagship churches across the country literally not do transitions well. There's some that are currently not in existence because when the senior pastor departed, essentially the congregation unraveled.
Right, and that's not what the church is about, you know, the personality. Exactly. In thinking about retirement and making this adjustment to retirement, how has your family reacted?
Well, actually, my wife and my kids, I have a daughter and a son, have been incredibly supportive. My wife has a huge advantage in the fact that she's moved much more frequently than I've moved. So for her, transitions have been more a part of her life in that way. So I'm the one that has trouble with transitions. So she's been a tremendous inspiration in really encouraging me that this can be, and indeed it will be, a very, very positive experience for everybody.
Okay. And what advice would you give to those pastors or rostered leaders, lay ministers out there who are listening to this, about the preparation for retirement? What advice would you give?
Well, I would say that it's probably, for me, the most difficult kind of ramp up that I've ever been engaged in, because the definition of retirement is very nebulous. It's somewhat controversial. It really depends tremendously on, I think, the bandwidth of one's life in terms of interests, in terms of passions and talents. And especially for clergy, I think we're vulnerable because a lot of us, because of the intensity of parish life, we give 24/7 to the congregation. Our identity gets perhaps too much wrapped up in the pastoral role. And retirement becomes difficult because we are not really prepared to go beyond the official professional role of pastor. So it's interesting. Will Willimon just recently has spoken on this, who now is teaching in retirement at Duke. And he intentionally, when he went to the Northern Alabama district of the United Methodist Church's bishop, he very intentionally limited his term to only 8 years so that he would intentionally retire at age 65. And basically, I have a quote here which I think is really relevant. He says, "I don't want to stay so long that I become a liability," he said. "Often pastors' identities are so tied to their jobs that they forget they can still serve the church after stepping down," said Willimon, who now teaches at Duke. Mm-hmm. "There's an ending to the pastoral life," Willimon concludes, "but the ending that you get is the opportunity to be a disciple again." So I really found that to be, I'm still mulling over that one. There is an ending to the pastoral life, Willimon says, but you do get to be a disciple again. And so I'm in the midst of pondering that and trying to figure out just what that means, and also needing to have some kind of place to show up. And I must put a plug in here for Gettysburg Seminary. This is one place that I show up that will still be available to me after next June. So I'm counting on this being a professional venue that I can actually show up in and actually feel as if I still have some kind of professional credence and credibility.
And I'm sure continuing your own theological education and reflection.
Yes.
And that's exciting.
Very much so.
I can't believe it, but our time is up.
Wow.
It really went rapidly.
And it did.
And I want to thank you for being here, but also thank you for sharing the issues and challenges
yes.
of transition or retirement for our listening audience.
Yes, well, it's an honor, and thank you for allowing me to be vulnerable as well.
Okay. For the Seminary Explorers, this is Nelson Strobert. I have been speaking with Pastor Paul Munday, who is the senior pastor of Frederick Church of the Brethren in Frederick, Maryland. Have a good day.
You have been listening to The Seminary Explorers from historic Seminary Ridge in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, a production of Gettysburg Seminary. We invite you to visit our website at www.ltsg.edu. Opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of Gettysburg Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.